This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
From the quit helpline to getting sugary drinks out of vending machines at places like the museum and the Melbourne Zoo, Vic Health have been a standalone organisation independent from the government for nearly 40 years. They take on the big harmful industries like tobacco, gambling and junk food. And the work of Vic Health on tobacco harm reduction is actually quite historic. It included things like the removal of tobacco company sponsorship within sports and the arts back in 1988. But Vic Health will be no longer. In the government cuts announced yesterday, Vic Health will be abolished as a standalone organisation. It will now be absorbed by the State Health Department, losing its independence. And we still have no idea which programs will and won't continue. So what does this mean? What does this mean for you? What does this mean for preventative health? What does it mean for local sporting groups or for research fellows who are trying to do things like make changes to the labelling of processed food or where fast food outlets should be allowed to open? Who will now fight these fights? Will the state government? Does absorption actually mean closure? And also this hour, it's Friday, so that means Jacinta Parsons and I hang out. And today we're talking everything from phone sober walking to facial fuzz.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Vic Health's independence from the government has quite possibly been a huge part of its success. It meant that they could take on those big commercial companies that cause harm to our health. So things like the food and beverage industry, big tobacco companies, alcohol and gambling. But given the announcement yesterday with all of the government cuts and that Vic Health was a part of that, it's essentially been axed. It's been swallowed up by the State Health Department. So what will happen? How will this play out? We have requested the Minister for Health, Mary-Ann Thomas. She wasn't available. Rob Moody is, though. He's a Professor of Public Health at Melbourne University, but also the former CEO of Vic Health. And Rob, you were in charge of Vic Health from 1998 to 2007. Did this surprise you yesterday? It sort of actually got a little bit lost in a lot of the jargon that came out yesterday. Were you surprised by the fact that Vic Health will no longer be independent?
Absolutely. It's a really retrograde step. It's meant to be a cost-saving step, and it'll actually add costs. I mean, the more you take out of prevention, and we're really struggling in Victoria, let alone across Australia, to actually put money into prevention. And we can see the results of that in ever-increasing numbers going into hospital, ever-increasing numbers going to general practice. We need a system that's also really helping prevent us getting sick in the first place.
Absorption or closure?
Well, it's interesting. I was in the Australian National Preventive Health Agency under the Roxon and when Nicola Roxon was Health Minister.
Yeah, we're going to speak to her in just a moment.
Yeah, when she went out of government and the Liberal Party took over the coalition, then it was disbanded and brought back into the parliament and just lost completely. And that's what I fear. I mean, one of the great, you just pointed this out actually, Michelle, one of the great advantages of the Vic Health is that it's independent and it can do the research and the advocacy against these huge forces that have got even stronger. I mean, you don't know how powerful food and beverage companies are, how influential they are, how even tobacco companies are incredibly powerful now. They've got so much money, let alone the gambling companies, who've virtually taken the role of government in many ways. So they control the agenda. They shouldn't be around the policy table. It doesn't do our health any good at all. We need an independent and a really evidence-driven Vic Health to help the health of Victorians.
The Public Health Association today have launched a campaign to save Vic Health. Why would it be important, and we will have a chat with them in just a tick as well, but why is it important to public health to have an independent body? Surely the state government has more sway, has more money, has more power.
Well, certainly has more money and more power, but the point is you need independent voices to actually do the research, to actually point it out to government and actually help government in a ways that government can't actually do it, because they're often so conflicted. And you need outside, really evidence-driven outside voices that are actually, you know, really built on good science and on good advocacy. And if you don't have those, then you just can't change the system. And the system, the balance of power is shifting so much away from, in a sense, from governments into really large corporations. And these large corporations are basically taking all the profits, but all the costs of it and the costs of illness are being borne by us as taxpayers and us as the government. So it's just not working at the moment. And that's why we need real investment in prevention from the very, you know, from whether it's in the local communities, whether it's in global policy. And Vic Health has led the way across Australia and led the way across the globe. I mean, this is the world's first health promotion agency funded by a tax, originally by a tax on tobacco.
Stay with us, Rob. Rob Moody is with you, Professor of Public Health at Melbourne University, the former CEO of Vic Health. Vic Health will no longer be an independent body as it has been for the last 40 years. It's been behind a lot of the campaigns and removal of harmful industries and everything from the arts to sports. It may have been behind one of the smaller campaigns at your local sporting group as well in terms of ensuring that everybody has got boots to play or that women have easy access to things like change rooms. It could be to do with the fact that there's no sugary drinks and vending machines when you go to the Melbourne Zoo. That's all of the work that Vic Health does. But I want to have a chat to Anna in Bryagalong. Hi, Anna.
Hi, I agree with Rob. It's a terribly retrograde step. We've got Vic Health, which has been extremely effective, and I've seen the effects in my life and in my local town. And the Department of Health, which is I've worked there. I didn't work there, but I worked with them through the Shire, and I've also experienced the health system. And it's a mess, an absolute mess, and there's no transparency to say, well, where is the problem? So I think Vic Health won't, their work won't be continued. Mm. It'll just be swallowed up and gone. And health will cost us more.
And I'm wondering too, Anna, given that you're from a regional and rural community, I know Vic Health did a lot of work in particular in the regs, in particular for Indigenous health in rural Victoria as well. Did Vic Health give you the opportunity to have a voice? It's very hard to get an answer from a state minister.
Yeah, I know. I feel for you. And yes, definitely gave me a voice. You can't even get an answer to a phone call from a big government department. If you do get into there, someone else is always responsible for your question, and they're probably on leave at the moment, so they'll get back to you.
Anna, thank you. Just finally, Rob, in terms of some of the landmark actions that have been taken as a result of the work by Vic Health against harmful industries, are you confident that the state government, if they now run Vic Health, if it goes in under the portfolio of health, will those fights still occur?
I think they're much likely. Well, they're less likely probably to occur, and less likely to occur with real effectiveness as well. That's why you need a certain level of independence. I mean, to a certain extent, also Vic Health was we ran to a board, and the board chair was responsible for the minister. So it wasn't completely way out there at all. So there's a constant connection with the department. That's why I cannot understand what's happening. Maybe if they wanted to actually, you know, reduce the budget, because that's happening in other parts of the department and the government, perhaps, but keep its independence. That is going to be so crucial over the next 10 years as these businesses and corporations get stronger and stronger and more powerful, and they start running the policy, not government. Government will lose their capacity to actually keep sensible health policy out front, particularly around all of these unhealthy commodity industries.
So the Public Health Association just finally, Rob, today have launched a campaign to save VicHealth. Do you think that will be listened to?
I certainly hope so. I mean, it needs to be listened to. I mean, public health and health promotion is something we really need. We know there's a voracious appetite within the healthcare system for treatment, but unless we're thinking longer term about prevention, then it's just going to get worse. You get more and more ramping in the hospital. Not a bit of control.
Good to get your thoughts, Rob. Thank you. Rob Moody, Professor of Public Health at Melbourne University, the former CEO of VicHealth. Are you concerned that VicHealth will no longer be an independent body? It's been that way for the last 40 years. If it gets absorbed by the state government, do you think it will have the same impact? This text: I am so angry to hear what they're doing to VicHealth. We need independence, especially given our state government. And another: just heard the news at VicHealth. I'm in shock. Youth crime is a public health problem. There needs to be an independent voice. And this is from Josh. It says, becoming a part of the health department doesn't mean a cut. Isn't this just a little bit of fear mongering? Well, Nicola Roxon, the former chair of VicHealth up until just a couple of weeks ago, and of course the former federal health minister for the Labor government back from 2007 to 2011. Nicola Roxon, a warm welcome to the Conversation Hour. Does a swallowing up by the state government, does that give VicHealth more or less power and independence?
Well, it totally removes the independence, Rochelle. And I think, you know, I completely understand financial pressures that health ministers can be under. But I also completely understand that if you constantly have to put ambulances at the bottom of the cliff and never build the fences at the top, you're just actually in a downward spiral that can't be fixed. So having VicHealth be independent from whichever government is in power has over nearly 40 years really enabled them to incubate such interesting ideas, policies that have been taken up, been a bit more bold than, you know, sometimes governments can be. And that's actually been its role, but yet to work still cooperatively with government and communities. So I don't think the role that it's played for nearly 40 years can effectively be played within the department, because there is a reason that you sometimes need to hear criticism and different ideas. And I think that the Silver Report missed that. They didn't understand what VicHealth actually does. And I think this is a mistake that they've still got the ability to reverse the decision
when they fully understand
the impact.
That's the call from the Public Health Association today. They've launched a campaign. As I said at the beginning, we have requested the Minister for Health, Marianne Thomas. She wasn't available. They did, Nicola Roxon, though, send us two lines. We're not sure who they are attributable to. It just says it's from a government spokesperson. And they've told us that they are addressing duplication by bringing the work of VicHealth into the larger Department of Health, and that the department will work with VicHealth to implement these changes. Is there a duplication? Is there something the equivalent of the Quit Helpline or the Cancer Council's programs or the This Girl Can program or the Sports Funding Disability programs? Are they already up and running in state government? Is this a duplication?
No, I don't think it is a duplication. And of course, you know, I'm recently finished in my role there. So I'm speaking just in my personal capacity. And I'm sure VicHealth will work with government. They'll have to. And maybe they'll be able to find a more sensible outcome. But those programs are some of many that have been incredibly effective that have not ever been run through the department. You know, they don't run social marketing campaigns about stopping vaping. You know, it was the VicHealth funded partnership with the Cancer Council that was able to get that up and running more quickly. The department doesn't have the expertise to do that. And that's fine, but it's not fine if you close down the organisations that can do it. And you sometimes need to hear things that you don't want to hear. I've been on the inside of that, where you think that someone advocating for something is a little bit annoying, to be honest, but actually they're right. So, and that's what we're trying to make sure we don't lose in the public health space in Victoria.
I'm trying to stay incredibly balanced on this as my role as an ABC presenter, but when I hear the word absorption, that it will be absorbed, it's hard to not see that as being diminished, or that it's just another word for cancelling, removing. In your time as Health Minister, Nicola Roxon, did you ever absorb another independent group or body or organisation like Vic Health? And did it continue to run in the same way or in a better way, possibly?
I don't think we've seen examples, whether it's at state or federal level, where absorbing, I put in inverted commas, your listeners can't see that, actually delivers a better outcome. And we have a health department that is massively under pressure and has lost hundreds and hundreds of workers in recent times. So they're not, it's not, oh, we'll bring this in because we'll combine it with some, you know, deep research expertise we have there and we'll partner with another organisation somewhere else. I think those discussions could have been had. There's plenty, but actually Helen Silver and the government did not talk at all to Vic Health about other options. And I think, again, that's a missed opportunity. And I hope your listeners understand this is something really unique. It was the first health prevention agency in the world set up at arm's length to be able to deliver specific policy innovation for governments to consider and then act on. And it's been copied around the world. And here we are talking about folding it back into a department that also has to manage hospitals and emergency departments and pandemics and other things. It just defies belief that absorption just won't mean we're shutting you up and we're defunding. And I don't think that any health minister would want to do that. And I think that Helen Silver has really made a mistake in including this in the entities that should be closed or absorbed.
Nicola Roxon, up until 2 weeks ago, you were the chair of Vic Health. Did you see this coming?
I absolutely did not. I served a 5-year term. It was a great honour to do that. And I really felt that Vic Health was left in a great state, very supported by the minister, an excellent new CEO, a fantastic First Nations leader who's just been appointed as the chair. I don't understand why you would do all of that, invest time and money and relationships with the community that are really deep and better than they've ever been, and then move it back into a department where the relationships are much more vexed and complex. So, you know, they're actually losing the communication and contact with community groups that sometimes can't easily have that contact and relationship with departments. And I think, again, it's a real shame. There's on and off always been calls for Vic Health to be closed because the tobacco industry hates it, you know, fast food industry hates them. You know, there's a lot of people that don't like Vic Health. It's just surprising to me that a Labor government would line up with all those big commercial interests rather than with, you know, a change organisation that's trying to invest in people's future health.
Good to get your thoughts on this, Nicola. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Nicola Roxon, former chair of Vic Health up until just 2 weeks ago, didn't see this coming, and former federal health minister with the Labor government from 2007 to 2011. We're talking about the announcement that kind of got a little bit lost yesterday with all of the government cuts that were listed, that Vic Health, who have been a standalone independent body for 40 years, will now fall in under the state government's just general umbrella of health. What does this mean for you? This is from Annie. It says, I always just thought Vic Health was a part of the state health department, sort of like a PR arm. And another saying, I've just heard this, I'm in shock. And others saying, Rochelle, Vic Health has been instrumental in promoting the inclusion of people with a disability in communities, in particular in leisure activities. Their work is vital. Lauren's in Stawell. Hi, Lauren.
Hello, how are you?
Really well. What did you want to say?
I've worked in the preventative health sector now for over 10 years. I actually studied it when I was at university. This is just really, I agree with like the callers so far with Rob and Nicola, a real detriment to community. I don't think people understand what Vic Health do and how that funding and that work flows down to grassroots level community groups and sporting clubs. And it's going to be a real impact on those. Mm.
So you don't think the state government will be able to deliver that, Lauren? So it's, you know, it's still, according to the state government, it's being absorbed. It's not being shut down. It will just no longer be independent.
Yeah, look, from my experience, I would, I'd be really concerned about that too. We've seen PCPs, like primary care partnerships, absorbed the last few years, and I've not seen really anything to come out of that that's trickled down to the community. So I just don't think it's going to be the best thing out there.
Lauren, good to get your thoughts. Thank you. Bruce is in North Bowen. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Rochelle.
What did you want to say?
I just wanted to add another dimension to this conversation about Vic Health. I've retired from the public service a few years ago. The pattern in recruitment to public service positions now, particularly senior positions, is you recruit people with very general management expertise. And my fear for Vic Health would be that over time, the senior positions in what would have been Vic Health will be replaced by people with general management skills, people who've worked in Treasury or worked in Premier's Department, and not people with subject matter knowledge, which if you look at any recruitment job description for a senior executive position in the public service, subject matter knowledge is minimised, and generally they rely on consultants to then give them some content, and, you know, worst of all the world, perhaps they'll rely on AI in the future to tell them things that they don't know themselves.
Should it be reinstated? So the Public Health Association today have launched a campaign to save Vic Health. Whether or not that's actually listened and people in power pay attention to the Public Health Association, but do you think that Vic Health needs to be saved?
Oh, absolutely. I think a body that's dedicated to that particular role of protecting the public health is much more valuable when it's independent than when it's absorbed into a government department, which, as I said, increasingly are devoid of subject matter knowledge.
This is from an anonymous a texter, and Bruce, given that you used to work in this area, it says, Rich, you know, just regarding the discussion on Vic Health, it's unfortunate, but that's the price of managing Victoria's debt. Other important agencies like Sustainability Victoria, those have been completely abolished. So if it's a duplication, if that is true, the minister wasn't available to come on and talk about where those duplications are, which programs may or may not continue. Is this necessary to stop the debt spiral that the state is currently going through?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so, and I would have thought the public health status of Victorians would have been a very major consideration in these sort of government decisions, particularly when the whole debate is actually tends to be around taxation and, you know, the desirability of minimising taxation. Well, one of the costs of that is that you lose the ability to have the full range of services which Victorians need. So really, in the past, we've obviously managed quite well with an independent Vic Health. The cost of Vic Health is surely not so great that even a state with a debt the size of Victoria's couldn't afford to keep it separate.
Bruce, thank you. Our number's 1300 222 774. If you'd like to join the conversation, maybe you've been a recipient of one of the Vic Health programs. It's when we talk about preventative health. I mean, I've interviewed fellows, research fellows, recipients from everything from fast food prevention, processed food labelling, sporting groups, inclusion, disability. Dr. Sandro DiMeo, the former CEO, was a regular on this program for years. So I kind of have a long and running list of the sort of programs and work that Vic Health do. My brain just goes to how will this be absorbed by the state government? How will they be able to carry on the work that's been done over the last 40 years? And how will they get out into those those communities. Maybe they'll be able to. Unfortunately, the Minister for Health, Marianne Thomas, wasn't available to speak with us today. Sarah Lowe is someone who you would know on this program as well, currently the CEO of Softball Australia. But Sarah, you were also a part of VicHealth. You were behind the Future Healthy program for VicHealth. So when we talk about the role that VicHealth played in grassroots sport and health prevention, what did you see them do, and are you confident that that will continue?
Thanks, Rish. And Future Healthy was a $45 million investment in response to the pandemic in 2020 and 21. And if we didn't invest and you know, change the system and support young people through that process, through their mental health, we wouldn't be here. And I'm massively concerned that this is being absorbed into the government when they don't have the expertise and they don't have the ability to be agile like VicHealth was. And you know, Nicola has said it, Dr. Rob Moody said it, you know, it's this ability to be independent and agile that gave VicHealth the ability to respond and be able to support sport. Because for me, you know, you and I, we're in sport. 30% of the funding to VicHealth has to go to sport. Where does that now go if it's being absorbed into the Department of Health? You know, we already saw what happened to OSA as well, you know, the Office of Women in Sport this year. This is a massive concern.
Well, we haven't seen whether or not that absorption of that government department has worked yet or not. Maybe it has. How do you think that local communities, regional communities, I know in your role at the Future Healthy program at VicHealth, Sarah Lowe, you were in the car a lot, you travelled a lot and you got out to those small and regional areas. Do you think that will be an issue?
Oh, it's going to be a massive issue. The amount of support that VicHealth did, like you say, we were pretty much on the road all the time and we could see the impacts of the funding that we were able to provide communities where it's been community-led and driven with the ideas that work for that local community. So, again, my concern is who's going to do that work and what's going to happen to sport and young people and their mental health in regional areas and also in metro.
What about for minorities? There's already texts coming in talking about the role for those who are living with a disability or just general inclusion in sport. The role that VicHealth played there was pretty big. You would hope that that will continue, but I mean, whose department does that fall under? Does that still fall under the Department of Health?
Well, I would fail to see how that could fall into that area because VicHealth was the one that led the Indigenous work that Nicola Roxon talked about, right? Multicultural, LGBTQI plus, and people with a disability. These are the people we represented and made sure that we funded and supported them. So how can one, like, and it's the health department, how are they actually going to do that?
Well,
it's a big question, right?
Yeah. Pauline says VicHealth saves money. It doesn't cost money. It's so short-sighted. But when we talk about health prevention, it takes a long time to see prevention work. It's not always obvious. But then it also takes a long time to see the impacts of absorbing departments into other departments. It'll be interesting, Sarah Lowe, to see what comes out of the Public Health Association's campaign that's been launched today to save VicHealth, whether or not that gets any momentum. So watch this space. Sarah, good to speak with you. Thank you. How's your puppy going that you inherited?
Ah, Snoopy, he's doing well. He's sitting at my feet. Aww. And please tell the public health, I want to be the first person to sign that document.
Oh, say hi to Snoopy for us.
I will. Thank you, Rish.
Sarah Lowe, she was formerly with VicHealth. She ran the Future Healthy program, currently the CEO of Softball Australia. Coming up in just a moment, strap yourself in, Miss Jacinta Parsons.
New from ABC Books.
The Dark Prince of Melbourne by Ian W. Shaw on the notorious Squizzy Taylor. And Outback Astronomer by Trevor Barry, the miner whose passion took him to NASA. Both out now from bookshops and online. On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
It's Friday. It's 25 minutes away from midday. So it's time to let loose. Jacinta Parsons, as always, we talk about something that people are talking about out there. It could be at the water cooler. It could be on your group chat. It could be on the big world wide web. Jacinta Parsons, hello.
Can I just say,
I've
got a young student here with me today. She's young and she makes a little bit of fun of the fact that I'm older and maybe don't know how to do things. And you just said World Wide Web.
I know,
in front of her.
Did you?
Yeah. You're not doing a John Fain.
Can you not ever say
it's
that
really
ever
hard,
again?
Isn't it?
Not only did I ask him to not say that, I asked him to stop wearing his Bart Simpson's T-shirt all the time.
Did you actually tell him not to do that? How did that go down?
Give that to me. I am throwing it in the bin.
And did you?
No. I reckon he still wears it.
Remember when he gave away all of his T-shirts at our Athenaeum show? Was that when we did it?
He had all of these.
Oh, yeah. Everyone from the quiz got an opportunity to go through John Fain's T-shirts that were ABC related, of course.
Speaking of T-shirts, I've been on a roll lately of shrinking T-shirts. So I'm living in a house at the moment with a dryer and I haven't had a dryer for a while. It broke. I've been hanging things out. It's been insane. Anyhow, there is a graveyard of very small T-shirts happening in our household, one of which I'm wearing.
Can I have a look right now? Is this the shirt you're wearing now?
Yeah.
I love that you call it a T-shirt. People need to know it's from the 70s, of which you are.
Does it look too small? I'm stretching it down.
You show a little bit of tummy.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Because I got changed at work and I put it on and I went,
Those terrible moments when you've got ready for work at work and you realise you forgot key components.
Like undies. One shoe.
And it depends on your workplace. That can be a celebrated thing. I think here is fairly good. We're pretty loose, don't you think?
I had a real moment of, what am I gonna do? Anyhow, my uncle did once ring my auntie and he was like in this position, like, you know, some kind of council job in Traff and in Trafalgar, for those who don't know what Traff is.
Traffic.
And he forgot his shoes. So he ran to work and, yeah, so he was walking around barefoot. So if that's been you, we'd love to hear from you.
Surely it has.
So I was a little shocked the other day. I was in the car and I pulled down the little mirror thing on the rear vision mirror, you know, the little that blocks the sun out.
A visor.
Visor, thank you.
I
looked in the mirror to see if I had food in my teeth. And I discovered I have facial fuzz. All of a sudden, I have this facial...
Like the babies do. Oh, so you don't have, like, hairs growing out?
No, I don't have, like, rogue black hairs that need to be pulled out.
I have no sympathy for you.
Oh.
I have been growing a beard now for some time, and there's a point where I have got to... Or it's like, maybe we should celebrate this.
This is what my question is. So I started to Google, I started to throw into my feed, body shaming, body celebration / facial hair. Where are we at with just rocking
the mustache?
Did you really?
Well, that was your first port of call, is to go, do I need as a feminist to be happy with my mustache?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's a reasonable question.
I say, because bad feminist, part of me goes, do whatever you want. Rock that beard, rock that moustache, have that facial fuzz. The other part of me goes, but I don't want a beard.
I don't know. I'm on the growing, because, okay, the other day I had a friend touch my face and then I was like, oh, God, there's a beard there. And I said, oh, you touched the beard. And they said, yes, I did.
So where do you stand? Are you removing facial hair or are you keeping facial hair?
Look, it's something to do with the lights if I feel like it. They're hard to get out one at a time when there's 25 of them coming from the chin. Look, I think we need to move into a new landscape for our daughters and our daughters' daughters that say, if you want to grow one, yes, do it.
1-300-222-774. Are you embracing your facial hair? Are you removing your facial hair?
Have you tried to grow it? Because, like, I would love a mustache.
I had, as a child, what my mum called a monobrow, right? So I had very, very thick eyebrows that went all the way. Look at you looking.
I'm plucked. There's
from
a teenager
very young
that's
age.
Looking at me right now that did a lot of work on that.
Yeah, and I've got 80s eyebrows. Our mothers who taught us to pluck to extreme on our eyebrows, they have a lot to answer
for. Do you know that I have never, ever plucked my eyebrows?
Really?
No.
You got good brows.
I'm a weirdo. Like, I just think I don't know how to be like that stereotypical.
But you don't need to pluck.
Oh, thank you.
The shape is good.
People who have been near them feel differently about it.
Really?
But yeah,
it grew in the middle and it was very thick. And so I got teased a lot at primary school. Yeah. And growing up in Trafalgar, our milk bar on the main street, Contingent Street, thank you very much, the milk bar, was next door to J&J's Hair and Beauty, right? I can't remember their names.
Yeah, so I was going to say,
J&J's.
Does anyone know what J&J stands for?
No. And so they did waxing back in the day, and my mum sat me down at J&J's Hair and Beauty.
How old were you?
Grade 6, 11, 12. Yeah, right. And my mum sat me down and Jay or Jay, not sure which one, both ladies, waxed my monobrow.
That's like not okay. If they're, you know, that's child protection services kind of stuff. You should have autonomy. Like, I would love, like, looking at your face now, yeah, because you were conditioned to believe that monobrow was not beautiful. I would love you monoing. And now you can't. You've got no choice.
Frida Kahlo style.
Exactly. All the good people.
This. I have a John Fane t-shirt, courtesy of being a part of a live quiz. It does its duty as a gardening shirt. I didn't think those things were still out and about and real and alive in society. But have you removed facial hair? Are you embracing facial hair? What's interesting, when I started to sort of look at the movement on this at the moment and where it fits into body shaming or fits into body acceptance, do you know who's pushing back and telling people to remove it? It's the mums. The mums of the daughters.
It is.
And there's lots of...
Mums of what era?
So probably
our era.
Our era.
Because you come from the lessons of pluck and you don't know how to undo that. Whereas, you know, perhaps had I grown up that way.
But I wonder if the younger gen are growing them and it's the mums that are telling us to remove them. And what you say to your mum if she says, so there's lots of reels going around where there's big, deep and meaningful conversations, generally in cars, and the daughter's going, and then there was this and this and this, and the mum's like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then the mum just stops and says, your mustache is too thick. Or it's what's going on with your mustache.
See that? This is where society's falling down. You know, if we can't handle naturally forming plots of hair.
Why do you pluck yours then?
Oh, I only did it because I was bored the other day. But yeah, I mean, I feel the pressure too. Yeah. I don't think people like to see me with a beard.
I don't
which
think.
Which is so terrible, isn't it?
Sue, good morning.
Yeah. Good morning.
Are you embracing hair, plucking hair?
I am plucking hair, even though I'm the strongest feminist you can imagine.
Talk to me.
Okay. I have discovered this is the third greatest beauty product I've found in my long life. And it is like it's a mini hair remover. It's about an inch across and it operates like, you know, those
where they pull it out.
Exactly. And it's got like a little round spiral thing on the top and it just spins around, takes off all the fluff and all the little stray black hairs that pop up every so often. It's fabulous.
And as a strong feminist, let's just interrogate that for a moment. Should we not be allowing the hair to run wild?
No.
No need to give us any of your ideology. I think that was strong
enough.
There's a line
that is close. What, I mean, why is it different? Or maybe it's not, right? Oh, so I'm going to ask you a really personal question and you can tell me to nick off if you want. What about legs? Are you shaving, waxing, letting them fly free?
Waxing.
Okay.
Been waxing for 50 years. And they're great. They're not growing back. Yay.
Yes. You got to that point.
See, I'm in a cohort where the women in my crew, and we don't live on a commune, but we do grow hair.
We do. I don't care.
I don't know how to say it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
Underarms. I don't care about underarms
you
either.
You don't.
So, no.
No, neither do I. Don't worry about it.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, we all have our lines, don't we? Sue, so, thank you.
No worries, but a lot of my hair fell out during chemotherapy, so it's less of a problem now.
Yeah, well, it's a good. That's the thing. And then if it starts to grow and your priorities change, there's been a few people that have said a similar thing. Hey, Sue, thank you. This, I wish the black hairs that poke out from under my chin would grow in my eyebrows.
I wonder if there's a transplant. I mean, surely there's a business that's been built on taking it out, putting it somewhere else.
I love you, Rish and JP, but I will not give up my car tweezers, best lighting to pluck out those mutant chin hairs. And another from Izzy that says, Rish, I feel for you. My mum and auntie waxed my underarms. Oh, man, that would hurt. When I was 13. Gosh, that was some trauma. I still love them, though. Gail's in Bendigo. G'day, Gail.
Oh, hi. This is such a subject close to my heart. I started taking action when I was at the end of my teaching career and a student in grade one said, excuse me, what? No, not even excuse me. Why do you have a mustache? And I thought, there's the line. This is time. So,
isn't that terrible, though? Because, like, why don't you have a mustache? Do you look good with it?
But, however, was everyone else thinking that as well? They're honest. So from the mouths of babes. So I started the painful, expensive process of electrolysis because I just used to have the stray, hairs that just didn't belong anywhere. And it was so painful, eye-watering and expensive. And then I hit 50, 55, and my body just went, well, there you go. There you go. There's a massive crop. And so I thought years and years of electrolysis wasted. So I just used the hair the cream remover. But the reason I do it is because I notice it on other people. And I don't judge and I don't appoint myself as the, hair reporter, although I'd love one of those in my life.
Hair reporter.
I would love someone to say, hey, just when you've got a minute in a bathroom, bottom left. Really.
Because I rock around with lots of it and I sort of forget that it's there, but obviously people see it, don't they?
Well, they do, and it's distracting, isn't it? We don't want it to be distracting, but you end up thinking, oh, God, I need to check the mirror in the car on the way home because it is a bit distracting. So I don't judge, but if I'm looking at it on others, then I just have to assume that the same thing's happening.
I just wonder why there's so many legs, underarms. We've even discussed pubic hair on this program.
Well, I wasn't part of that, but sure, continue.
You sat there and nodded. there was an agreement. Why facial hair? It's that last one where we go, I consider myself a feminist, but I am going to remove these. This, I discovered underarm hair stops growing when you turn 65. And Katie says, get into laser. Well, no, laser is expensive and it's painful.
Do you know what happened to me? It just reminded me when Gail was telling that story. I was in a doctor's surgery and he leans over to pull a hair off my face thinking it was just like there's no way it could be connected.
And it was.
And I had to say, that's mine and I like it there. Because what else could I say? I had to own it like I knew it
was
growing
out. Hang on, where was it? Like on your neck?
Nah. I have these really crazy ones that grow out of the side of my head.
What?
Yeah.
Not even your chin.
Oh, no. Chin, absolutely. I don't have any mustache. For a girl who wants one, I don't have any of that.
I don't have. I've just got just the all-over fuzz, right?
I love this. You're going
glow.
Back. It's good. What's wrong with that? What's not?
Could you not combine yours into eyelashes in some way?
Like roll it in from the side up to the top?
Yeah, maybe.
I could actually. It's long enough for me to pull in over my top lip.
No, I don't mean like that. Oh, okay. I mean like make them your eyelashes. Like the young girls that have got the lashes. Yeah, that are so big that look like they're going to fall face. What's going on? Is that trend out?
Stop it. Because we are not to make comments on beautiful young women who are doing things that we think are strange. Okay?
Love this chat says this. I'm 45. I have tweezers in the car. The other day I found a white hair in my moustache. Plucking those hairs. I'm not ready for a white moustache and beard yet.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Jamil has called through.
Yes. So my name's actually Dr. Jamil Corsing and I did my doctorate on cultural intelligence. And one of those things that is a nuance in the Sikh religion, for example, is that we keep our hair. Hair is part of our identity. Mm. So you have a lot of women that have a lot of facial hair, because obviously of Indian origin, hair is very predominant in our culture. And I remember growing up and not being allowed to cut my hair or talk to mum about shaving and stuff. And I actually bought a razor and then managed to cut my leg really nicely shaving when I was about 14
there's
years
nothing worse.
Old. And oh, my God, the pain.
And that slice.
I still remember it.
Yeah, I can too. There's nothing like a razor slice on your leg and you just know that you've done it.
And you try to be secret.
Yeah. And so, and then the other, so then when my daughter was growing up, I was very conscious about what I had to go through with the bullying and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And so talked about it, made sure she was waxing, I think, when she was about 14. And then when she turned 16, I got her a laser hair package to make sure that she didn't have to go through all of that sort of stuff on a constant basis. But
the
now,
bullying is full on, isn't it?
It is amazing, especially for the Sikh women who wear that have the facial hair. And a lot of the cultural, like with your Indian descent or Arabic descent and stuff, there is a lot of hair on our body.
I love that you did a PhD on this. What were you actually looking at? Like cultural, the ways that we code to each other and then that out of place? So suddenly taking a culture.
Thesis. Yeah, so that my thesis was actually cultural education as a framework for policy formation and how I think more importantly is the identity crisis that Australia is going through. I mean, my ancestry's been here since 1880. And for me to not feel like, say, oh, where are you from? It's like, oh, from Adelaide originally. I mean, what do you want me to say?
And isn't it interesting too, Jamil, when you look at, I don't know, Frida Kahlo, right? Or someone who was revered, famous, feminist, muse, you name it. Well, you know, to this day, we are still looking, studying, analysing what she meant for all of society. Facial hair, there, out and proud, never changed.
Yeah. I mean, I do know I don't have tweezers in my car like you ladies do, but
I don't.
When I see that grey hair under my chin, oh my God, it's gone with as thin as it's been.
Can I ask you, because this is obviously a really important cultural part of your life, how does it feel, you know, your mum kind of passed that to you and was really strict about it, then you went, okay, I can't have my babe go through any of that stuff. Do you feel that there's a loss of that culture that's been enforced?
I think, I mean, for a Sikh, hair is their identity. Yeah. That's why they wear the turban and things like that. I don't think the identity had to include facial hair, but that's my personal
opinion. Got it.
And I think the identity where we have long hair, and I still have long hair, my sisters and I, my parvin, my younger sister, she's just been nominated for a Grammy and stuff. She's got long hair.
What's her name?
My nephew, he's 10 and his hair goes down to his ankles. He's got the longest hair. And so we make sure every year
family.
At school we take out his hair and everybody knows and all the women, all the girls will be like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. And he's really proud of it. So we make sure that people know who we are and why we are. And
Jamil, I'm so glad you pulled over this van.
Thank you.
To talk to us.
What was the Grammy for?
She got nominated for Jazz Artist of the Year. Her name's Parvin Singh. She was in Bombay Royale, which was
Bombay Royale.
This text. Good on you, Jamil. Drive safe. I've got white hairs on my chin. I call them my billy goat gruff. I went to Singapore for work last week. I forgot the tweezers. What the hell? I was trying to dig those little fellas out with my own stubby nails.
That's my job too.
That's from Sal in Coburg. Quickly talk to Helen in Yarra Glen. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. What do you want to say?
I just had to ring to let you know about the most endearing comment. He was a very young child when he made this comment. My youngest grandson said to me, Granny, you've got whiskers just like my pussycat.
You know what, Alan?
We do.
Said with love, he would have, you know, loved those whiskers.
And this is the point that we get to a certain period in our age where do you just embrace the whiskers now, Helen?
Oh, well, not the long ones, no.
No, okay, we all have a lie, don't we? Isn't it interesting that, JP, as feminists, many of us are removing the whiskers. We're removing the facial fuzz.
Oh, look, you are.
I'm not. I'm just telling you.
Actually, no, true. If I run my... No, there's actually quite a bit there.
Is there? Give me the tweezers. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.